This is Comic Talk Today for Wednesday, March 28th, 2018. Now I want to kick off by thanking everybody that commented on yesterday's episode. It was so far the most commented episode of the podcast. Now granted, there's only been like 6 or 7 episodes and that's fine. The podcast is brand new. But thank you for everyone that left me a comment on Twitter, that sent me an email, and the couple people that left iTunes reviews. I appreciate that. I'm glad that everyone's enjoying the show because I am having a killer time doing this podcast. So, I do want to talk about my con experience a little bit. But first, before I do that, I want to bring up some of the comments I received for yesterday's podcast about DC Rebirth being dead. And I'm sure I'll be getting some more comments over the next few days. Not everyone listens immediately, and that's understandable. I'm recording this just a few hours after I put out the DC Metal or DC Rebirth is Dead episode. And so I want to give some people time to think about what I said and see what comes out of it. But I do want to read and talk about some of the comments that I received. And the first one is from Chris Parton, who is also a podcaster. He used to do an Aftershock podcast. Well, he was doing a Boom podcast. I don't know what happened. I think his computer blew up. But Chris replied and said the easy route would be to say that you're wrong, but you're not. I remember most of what you said was said. I just ignored it ever happened because plans change sometimes before they get started. And I think that's a good point. But the problem is in the marketing message, right, Chris? So I totally understand that plans change. Plans change all the time. I'm sure that's what happened with Hawkman. That's what happens to a lot of companies, right? We get a book announced. I remember, so for anyone that follows my other podcast, I'm a big Valiant fan. And even though I'm not doing my Valiant podcast anymore, of course, I still read the books. And I remember it was a big thing for Valiant when they announced Savage that it was going to be a big thing. And now that they've been acquired, it seems like Savage is going away. I remember Free Comic Book Day last year. They announced the Psylords book that I've been waiting for 20 years, and that was canceled. I totally understand that. I get that plans change, but the thing is, it's really important if you want to please your fans that if you say that you're going to do something, you go ahead and do it. If plans change, plans change, and that's totally understandable. But the sales for DC Rebirth have been great, so it's definitely not a sales problem. It's not a storytelling problem. The stories have been great. So I get what you're saying, Chris, but I'm not sure quite agree with your point. But give me some follow-up and we'll talk about it. Matter of fact, Chris, I want you to come on this podcast. You need to come sit on the therapy couch. We'll talk on a Thursday. Soups DeJour, who I'm assuming is a Superman fan, because he's got a Superman logo as his avatar on Twitter, says that, creatively speaking, Snyder has become to DC what Bendis was to the Marvel Universe, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I think that's a pretty loaded statement for such a short tweet. So thanks, Soups DeJour. I'm not sure where to take that, to be honest. It's a good point. Because I think what Bendis was doing at Marvel, it wasn't, I don't want to use the word lackluster. I don't think that's fair. But I think in many respects, the direction that his books were going weren't quite hitting the mark for a lot of people. And it's not that I'm a Bendis hater. You know, when Aaron was on, we talked about Bendis a little bit. We joked around a little bit. And I know in other podcasts I've joked around a little bit about the type of story that Bendis started to tell over at Marvel. But you know, I remember reading Bendis like way back in the day, and like AKA Goldfish was just freaking amazing. And I think he does very well with those type of stories, more street level stuff. And you know, I think the work that he's done with Jessica Jones, for example, is fantastic. I loved his Alias series. Of course, I'm a big Jessica Jones fan. I love the show. I know a lot of people kind of poo-poo the show a little bit, but I think it's a great show. And I haven't started, well, I watched one episode of the new season, so I don't want to talk about it yet. But I think that character is really, really interesting. I think the stuff that he was doing on Defenders was really, really interesting. His Daredevil stuff was pretty damn good. So I get what you're saying, but I'm not sure I entirely agree. I think the thing is, when you become such a big name, you're giving so much free rein, maybe sometimes you tend to do things that in your head sound truly amazing, but when they go and get put down on paper, it doesn't quite always work out. I think that might be what the problem is. But I get what you're saying. And again, I'm going to give these books a shot. and we'll see what happens. I know tomorrow, well, actually today, as of the time this comes out, today we're getting both Dark Knight's Metal number 6, which is the final issue. We're also getting a new issue of Doomsday Clock, if I'm not mistaken. So that'll be interesting. And that kind of goes into what I got from Ryan, and he is at Tim3Robin, and he says, listen to Comic Book today. Man, I should have picked a different name on this podcast. Listening to Comic Talk today, love the idea behind today's episode. Rebirth by Johns was launched as Dr. Manhattan removed 10 years and Doomsday Clock is a continuation. It is supposed to be 1 year into the future of the DCU. Delays have made that seem like it won't align. I think that's important. That's a great point, Ryan. And that's something I hadn't thought about, because it does take place in the future, and we have heard that eventually the timelines will collide where things will make sense. Again, the way that things are going now, though, it doesn't seem like it will fit. And he did have some follow-up to this. Tinian's detective, well, he said tech. Good man, it's tech. Tinian's tech seemed to line up with Batman future shown in Doomsday Clock the most. Ultimately, I agree with you, but hopes that somehow it all gets pulled together when Doomsday Clock ends and Johns becomes a regular comic presence again. After all, DC has stated Legion and the Justice Society of America are off limits until Doomsday Clock ends. Now, I hadn't realized that point, that they weren't going to allow anybody to touch those properties. So that's a good bit of information. I appreciate that. And you're right. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, maybe sometimes we tend to start spitting out ideas before we get some kind of resolution to whatever story we're reading at the time. And I agree. I think a lot of times as comic fans, we do tend to go into maybe the slightly more emotional side of things and feel like maybe things aren't going to work out. Right? I remember Captain America, prime example, last year when it was hinted that he was a Nazi. Everyone went crazy. Just absolutely bananas. And that whole thing resolved itself. A little MacGuffin-y, but it resolved itself. So I think that's a good point, Ryan. I hadn't thought about that. And I hope you're right. I hope that when we look back, or look forward, when we look at the next year, when Doomsday Clock is beginning to finalize, I hope that you're right, and I hope that we do see how all these things have become related. And I know he said that he heard on a podcast with Snyder that he and Johns had worked together to make sure that what Snyder is doing in DC Metal kind of talked to the story that Geoff Johns was trying to tell in Doomsday Clock. And if that's the case, then that's great. I hope they do find a way to put that together. My concern is, if the Snyder stuff in Justice League becomes extremely popular, as I'm sure it will be, and if these books come out consistently on time, on schedule, like they're supposed to, then people will kind of start not caring as much as Doomsday Clock, because the scheduling is so much different for that book. But I hope you're right, Ryan. So, great point. I appreciate that. Friend of the show, Aaron Bell, our guest last week, was very angry. He said, I'm so annoyed by this. Let's take all the awesome things we've been doing in Rebirth and skew them towards all the terrible bullshit from Metal. God, I love when Aaron gets angry. He's the best. He really is the best. I'm sure he's going to talk about that on Absolute DC a little bit. And I'm sure next week he'll be back on the podcast. Maybe we can talk about this a little bit more. But again, thanks for everyone listening to the episode. Thanks for everyone that shared it. It has been pretty fun watching the reactions throughout the day. And I can't wait to see more. So be sure to go back and listen to that episode. Think about it. Get in touch with me at GeekVine on Twitter. ComicTalkToday@gmail.com is the email address. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about my con experience yesterday. Or I guess it was Sunday. So this past weekend, I went to SC Comic Con, the local convention. It's gotten rather large. I don't know what the turnout was for Saturday, because I wasn't able to make it for Saturday. I just made it on Sunday. And it was pretty busy. I know the con has been growing quite a bit over the last couple of years. They've had, I know last year they had record attendance. I'm sure I'll find out at some point how the attendance was this year. But just like every con, Sunday tends to be family day. So the tickets are a little bit cheaper. Some people start packing up early. There's vendors there that are giving discounts to kids or people with kids. And it's a little bit more friendlier. There's a lot more children, of course, on that day, and many less panels. Usually I try to attend every con that I go to. I try to attend at least a few panels. This year I could not because I wanted to make sure that I got to experience the floor. Generally, I tend to go both Saturday and Sunday, and this year I only went the one day. But I wanted to talk about being a vendor or artist at a convention. And I know this will change depending on which convention you go to, where in the country you are. I would say maybe even what day you go to the convention. Because I've been to conventions where it's extremely friendly. Like usually if it's, for example, the last year I went to C2E2 in Chicago, and I went all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday was amazing, completely amazing, because generally people are still working, and so it's a lot less busy. People are more able to spend time with you, right? Because there's not as many people walking around the convention floor. You can spend a little more face-to-face time with people. You're not knocking each other around the convention floor. Saturday, it's always ridiculous crazy, because generally that's when everybody shows up to conventions. And this is true of every con that I've ever been to. Saturday's always the busiest. And if you go to conventions regularly, you will know that this is the case. Sundays, again, get a little less busy than Saturdays, but still busier than, let's say, a Friday. And of course, you get a much more family-friendly day. For most conventions, not every single one, but for a lot of them, it works this way. So over the last couple of years, what I've started doing is I take my kids with me to at least the one local convention. Sometimes we'll go to more, like Heroes is fairly local, it's just a couple hour drive. We sometimes go to NC Comic Con, which is a little bit farther, but still, I guess, local. And what I've noticed over the years, and it became very clear to me this past weekend, is that there are some vendors that maybe just shouldn't have booths at conventions. Now, I will say this will mostly apply to actual vendors, not necessarily writers or artists. Because for artists, it's a little bit different, right? Writers or artists, it's a little bit different. Generally, if you go to a con, a lot of times it's more of a local con for you. Not always, but sometimes. Or you tend to go frequent the local cons more often. Because, of course, it's just very easy to hop there. If you work for, we'll just say, a company that has books in the top 300, okay, on the diamond sales list, chances are you'll have at least some fans that show up to the con just to see you, or make it a point to go see you, because you're there. With vendors, it's going to be a little bit different, right? Because you're at these conventions to try to sell your goods. Now, what I have noticed, and it became very clear to me this past weekend, is it almost seems like there are some vendors that take going to conventions as more of a chore than a place to sell your goods. Whatever goods it might be, original art, old comics, new comics, dollar comics, posters, prints, whatever. Now, I do make it a point not to purchase, for example, prints or anything like that from those vendors that just have, like, stuff they're reprinting that they don't have rights to, right? I always make it a point to visit the indie booths to see what, like, cool indie books may be out that I've never heard of that maybe I can't find in a shop that I can't order from somewhere online. Okay, these are like local people, generally, that want to get into comics, and they have something to sell. And a lot of times, they have some really cool stuff. Not always, but a lot of times there is cool stuff. And of course, it seems that in bigger cities with bigger conventions, there's more of these people for multiple reasons, partially because since there will be more foot traffic, they will be better able to sell their goods. Totally understandable. But what kind of irked me this weekend was that I started to realize that when I have my kids with me at the convention, I seem to get less attention from these vendors. At least, it seemed that way on Family Day. So my question to these vendors is, why not just pack up your stuff on Saturday and not show back up? Now, it's very possible that these people have quotas they want to meet, and by Sunday they've met their quota and whatever. But a lot of these people had empty booths. There was nobody there except me and my kids. And I can't tell you, because I quit counting, the number of booths that I would show up at and not even get a, hello, how are you? Is there something that you're looking for? How are you supposed to sell anything at one of these conventions if you don't take the time to build a relationship with the people that are showing up to these places? Because sure, there are people that go just to hang out, okay? There's plenty of cons that I've been to where I really just go to hang out with my friends. C2E2 is a prime example. Now, yeah, of course I buy stuff, but I don't, like, plan on buying anything. If I see something cool, I'll pick it up and get it. But I go to hang out, in particular for people that I maybe only see at these conventions. Now, we might talk, you know, online or over the phone or whatever, and so the experience is a little bit different. And I guess people that show up with their kids, automatically the assumption would be that they're local, and they're just there to get, like, a keychain for their kid, or like a stuffed animal, or whatever the hell. Okay? One of those little blind prize boxes that they sell billions of at the conventions. But I don't go for that. I go, yeah, to hang out with my friends if it's one of those cons, like Heroes or C2E2. But a place like SC Comic Con, NC Comic Con, something like that, it's local, and I want to support local people, and I'm there to get stuff. I'm there to buy stuff. I don't just go and get my entry ticket and walk around and say goodbye. I'm looking through boxes. I'm talking to artists. I'm talking to writers. I'm talking to cool people who I've never heard of before to see what it is that they're up to, how I can support those people. And I gotta say, for the most part, the creator booths that I showed up at, and there were quite a few, were very friendly. Some friendlier than others. For example, Sanford Green is the coolest dude ever. He was working on Luke Cage. Super cool dude. He's a local guy, local-ish guy, and he's at all the conventions, all the local cons. Fantastic guy. Super friendly. Always has a smile on his face. Always willing to talk to anybody. Always willing to talk to your kids. There's some creators, I didn't even get a hello. So for example, I showed up to one booth, and I'm not going to call any of these people out by name, because I don't think that's fair either. But I went to one booth, and the creator does a small indie comic for a relatively new publisher, and this book is about a bunny. We'll just say that. It's a book about a bunny. And so, of course, I show up with my kids, and he's got little bunny plushes on his rack. He's got his books there. He's got a trade paperback, so I'm assuming this is with this new publisher, he's reprinting some of that stuff. It wasn't a paperback, sorry. It was a hardcover. And I went there, and we started looking at stuff. And of course, my kids went directly to the stuffed bunnies. Understandable, they're kids. Okay, 14 and 7. And so they went to look at the little bunnies. They love the bunnies. The guy that didn't even look up. I'm looking at the comics because I've heard about this comic. I haven't read it, but I do have a couple friends that were talking about this book recently. And I wanted to see what it was about. But at no point in time did this person engage with me about the book. And had he even paid attention, he would know that I was well aware of his comic, because when my kids were looking at the plushies, my daughter's like, oh, look, it's a bunny. And I said, yes, it's, and I named the character. And of course, he wasn't paying attention, so he didn't know. My assumption was he thought I was just looking for something to buy for my kids. And his book is very much not for kids. And so I understand that, but had he been paying attention, maybe he would have realized that I did know his comic and I wanted to know more about it. And I purposely went to his booth to see if he would actually talk to me about it. And not once did he. In matter of fact, his publisher was also there. And I'm a big fan of some of their titles. One in particular. And not a single time did anybody at that booth talk to me. I looked through all the boxes of books they had there. I looked through the trades they had there. They were all just kind of talking to each other, hanging out, not saying anything. Some other people were super cool. So Ominous Press was there. And of course, I'm an old school comic guy. So I remember Ominous Press from the, early 90s, mid 90s? I don't know, something like that. And Bart Sears was just hanging out at his table. And I walked by. And of course, I swing by. Every time they're at a con, I swing by and I talk to those guys. Generally, it's Bart and Smith and Ron Mars are at the tables. And Ron wasn't there, but Bart and Smith were there. And I walked by, and Bart was super friendly. He looked up, he said, hey, how are you? Before I even said anything. And I don't think he remembers me from other cons. I'm sure he sees a billion people. And that's all it took, right? Because I didn't really plan on going and getting anything from him, because everything they've already put out, I have. But as it turned out, the fact that he just looked up and said hello and engage with me, I stopped and talked to Bart, and I told him, you know, I talked to him about, I saw them at Heroes last year, and how I talked to them when they first announced Ominous coming back. At, matter of fact, it was the week right after SC Comic Con last year. And so we talked for about 10 minutes. And of course, my kids are super cool, so I appreciate that. Because they know when I go and I stop at a booth and I talk to somebody, it's probably for a reason. They know I love comics. They know I podcast about comics. And so they're super cool. And Bart was super awesome. As a matter of fact, I did end up buying something from him. I bought, they had a Kickstarter recently. Oh man, what's the name of the book? Something Black Hand. I can't remember exactly the title of the book. But I totally missed out on the Kickstarter. And so they had the book there. I went ahead and bought it. Hadn't even planned on it. But just a simple fact that Bart Sears took a second out of his time. And I mean, he wasn't doing much. He was just hanging out at the booth. He was by himself. There was nobody else there with him. Just the fact that he took the 5 seconds and I approached the table ended up becoming a sale. And that didn't take much for him. So that was important for me. And I noticed that through some of the other booths. Like, for example, guys that write maybe bigger books. The Youngblood creative team was there. And I've really been digging the Youngblood series, the new one. They were there. I got to talk to them a little bit about it. We talked to X-Men a little bit also. They were super nice. But also, they approached me. As I walked by, they're like, hey. And I'm like, hey, all right. Let me go talk to you. But then there's other guys that aren't even doing anything, right? So in particular, artists, a lot of the artists, they're trying to keep busy at the conventions. Some of them sure have commissions that they're working on, so they've got their head down. That I totally understand, right? So if I walk by a booth and I see somebody actually working, I'm going to see kind of what they're, I want to see what they're working on. I'm curious. And if I've never heard of them, I want to see exactly what they're working on and what kind of work they have for sale. What really irked me, though, was the actual vendors that were there. Because generally, I don't do a whole lot of comic shopping at conventions. I don't like carrying big, heavy bags. I never take like a box of books with me or anything like that. I don't do any of that stuff. But I will pick up some stuff. So I have a bag with me. And when my bag is full, I'm kind of done getting stuff. But there were a few books that I was looking for. Matter of fact, I talked to Chris on the I Am Gotham by Geeks crossover episode we just did. The Gotham by Geeks episode 86, I want to say. So go check that out. But the one book that I was kind of really looking for was Batman 181. And I was also looking for a Fantastic Four number 19. So if you don't know what those books are, Batman 181 is the first appearance of Poison Ivy. Fantastic Four number 19 is the first appearance of Ra's al Tut, who is one of the incarnations of Kang the Conqueror, who I've become very fond of lately. So those were the two books that I was looking for. And I had a little list with me. There's a few other Batman books that I'm looking for. I'm not going to talk about them tonight. Maybe at some point I will. But that's what I was looking for. So if I saw a vendor that had more than just, you know, 50% off trades or here's my 50-cent bin or whatever, if I saw they had actual cool stuff, maybe like up on the wall, then I'd stop by and start looking through them. And look, I understand that these people can't give every single person at a convention like a personalized experience. That's totally unfair for anybody to want that. But what I do want is some kind of interaction that shows me that you're interested in my business. Because I've been in customer service for, oh boy, I feel like I'm getting so old. I don't know, 20 years. Is that right? 15 years? Let's just say 15 years. It's probably closer than 20. I've been in customer service in some way, form, or fashion for 15 years. And the key thing is not that the customer's right, but that the customer feels like they're welcome in whatever business you're in. That the customer feels like they're wanted and they're understood. Even if you can't fix their problem, that you will find a way to fix their problem. That you understand the problem they have and you will try to make it better. And some of the things to make the customer feel that way are very simple. Like, for example, saying hello, or thank you, or goodbye, or have a great day, or I can't solve that for you right now, but let me get somebody that can. Very simple things. And it doesn't take a whole lot. And in many respects, it is a very thankless job, but it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot of effort. It's just being able to understand and relate to people, in particular, when they're ununderstandable. Is that a word? I'll just make it up. Listen, it's Trump's America. We can make words up. Ununderstandable and unpleasable. That's the key to customer service. But it's very simple. And that's all I want. And maybe it is because of that mentality that I'm a little weirded out when I go to a convention and a vendor or a creator can't take 2 seconds just to look up and say, hey, is there something you're looking for? Because there were books that I was looking for. And matter of fact, there were some people that had what I wanted whose booths I left and didn't buy anything from because there was no interaction. And I know some of you are probably thinking like, Martin, you are just an a-hole. That's not how things go. And that's fine if you think that way, but guess what? I don't. And I think that's a pretty crappy way of looking at things. Because part of what makes comics such a good business to be involved in is the interactions that you have with other people. I mean, I spent the first 15 minutes of this podcast talking about a few of the interactions I had on an episode that just came out, and all I'm doing is a podcast that's listened to a few thousand people. I'm not going to give a number. Maybe at some point I will. And that's all I'm doing. I'm just a dude behind the microphone taking out an hour of my day to talk about things that I enjoy. These people are at a convention to make money. So why do you not want to make money? Is that what it is? You don't want to make money. Because I'm pretty sure that that's not why you go to a convention. Now, there might not be a whole lot of money in comics for the majority of people, I would say. But I would think at the minimum for a vendor that has a booth at a con that you paid for, that you would want to try to sell as much stuff as you can so you don't have to lug back all those heavy boxes back to your van and drive back home wherever you're at. And now granted, most of the stuff that I was looking for is not very expensive. Now the Batman 181 is a very hot book right now, and I would think that it would be well worth somebody's time to provide me with some level of customer service where I would want to spend my money with you. For example, I went to one booth, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he was super awesome. He had a ton of key books behind him on the wall. He had a small booth and not a whole lot of boxes, maybe like 30 boxes. And I looked through the majority of them. He had some interesting stuff, but nothing that I really wanted. There were a couple things in those boxes that I thought about picking up, but they weren't in great condition. And I'm not looking for like, you know, a CGC 9.0 of anything, but you know, I also don't want like rip covers or missing chunks of covers or anything like that. So I looked through the boxes to see how he interacted, because that's kind of always my MO. If you actually engage with me, then maybe I'll consider looking a little bit further and spending some money. So I looked through a couple boxes, and my oldest kid walked off to do some other stuff. Zoe was with me. She's 7. And she was super cool. Her feet were getting tired because we were walking around a lot. So I just had her sit down on the floor next to me while I was digging through the boxes. And noticed he didn't really have what I wanted. But I was like, you know what? I'll keep looking. So I looked. By the time I get to the second box, he got done talking to somebody else that was at his booth. And he's like, hey, is there anything that you're looking for? Anything I can help you find? And I was like, not right now. I'm kind of just looking. But there might be something. So just come back to me in a few minutes. And he had like 5 or 6 other people there looking through stuff. He went. He talked to every single person. And once he got done helping all those people, he came right back to me and said, hey, did you find what you were looking for? Well, by this point, I had kind of scanned through all the stuff he had on his wall. And it turned out that he had 2 copies of Batman 181. And so I was like, yeah, I'm looking for a Batman 181. I see you've got a couple there. Let me take a look at them. And he was super awesome. He's like, yeah, no problem. So he grabbed them. He's like, they're not in the best quality, not the highest condition, but they're good reader copies. And so I'm looking at them, and he had them in very nice bags. They were almost like plastic. They were almost like one of those like insert sleeves that you put like prints and things on, but not quite that thick. And so I couldn't see very well, but I could tell it was kind of beat up. And so I asked him to get one out of the sleeve for me so I could take a look at it, and he was more than happy to do so. I looked through it, and I thought about it. I thought about buying the book for the simple fact that the guy was taking the time out of his day to talk to every single person at his booth and actually willing to help me. But the thing was, he wanted, I think both copies were the same. I think they were $150 apiece, and which is a good price. They were, as we like to say, shitter copies. So I ended up not buying either one of them. But we talked. We talked about the books that he had. He told me where he got them from, how long he'd had them. And he asked if I had found any elsewhere. And I told him that I had, because at this point I had found another one. There was another vendor that had one for $400. And it was in better shape than his, but not by much, to be honest. And so I told him I was kind of going to look around some more and think about the price. He was pretty firm on it, which I totally understand. because the book is hot and he will sell it to somebody at that price and in that condition. But we talked. He spent about 10 minutes with me, which is way more than I expected. And then I went my way. He went to talk to somebody else. But it was great. He was very engaged. Now, the other guy that had the Batman 181 was almost as good. And I almost thought about getting his copy. But I did find a better copy. And it was kind of the same thing, right? I showed up. He said, hey, how are you? Let me know if you need something. He went off to talk to somebody else. I looked through some boxes. I saw that he was being helpful to everybody that showed up at the booth. I saw the Batman 181 and I said, hey, can I just take a look at the 181? He said, sure. So he gave it to me. I looked at it. He's like, you want me to take it out? I said, all right. Pulled it out. Took a look at it. We talked about it a little bit. And we talked about the price. He was pretty firm on the 400. And I kind of told him how I felt about the book. Kind of what I was willing to pay for a copy in that condition. And he didn't want to do that price, which is fine. But it was, you know, a very friendly discussion. But then I got annoyed a little bit because this guy showed up, noticed that we were talking about the book, and he's like, it's way underpriced at 400. And I didn't want to get into an argument with this guy because in the condition that it was in, I don't think it was underpriced at even 300. So I just kind of left the guy alone. The guy was super cool. I walked off and I did find a CGC 5.5 for 500 that I did not buy because I did not want to spend $500 on the comic. But those people were also pretty cool. And I talked to them a little bit about it. So my search for Batman 181 continues. I had a similar experience when I purchased my FF19. I went to the booth. It was a father, a guy, and his wife, and their son. The couple was older. The son was probably roughly my age, I would say. But again, super friendly. I showed up. Dad said, hey, just let me know if you need something. I looked around. I saw they were being helpful to everybody else. Saw the FF19 up on the... Well, actually, I didn't see the FF19. There were a couple other ones that I saw up on the shelf. And I was like... the dad came up to me. He's like, hey, is there something that you're looking for? He's like, you look like you're looking for something. I said, yeah. I was like, I just don't see it on the wall. And the son came up. He's like, well, tell me, what is it? I'll take a look. I told him FF19. And there was one up there hiding up on the second row. And he pulled it out, looked through it. And he was asking like $80 for it. Which I had seen him for roughly that price and roughly in that shape. But, you know, usually on Sundays, you can try to get a better deal if you haggle with him a little bit. So I'm looking at it, and he saw that I maybe kind of wasn't too happy with it and offered to take a couple bucks off of it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure if I want to do that. We talked a little bit more. He asked me why I wanted the book. I went through the whole story. And he's like, look, I'm going to give it to you for this price. He's like, you want to pay with a card, I can't do it, but if you want to do cash, I'll give it to you for this price. So I went to the ATM and I got the cash and I bought the book. And we had a great interaction. The guy was super knowledgeable. He understood what I wanted and the transaction was easy. And it didn't take a whole lot of time. I mean, we could have really ended the whole thing in like 2 minutes. But the fact that he actually wanted to talk to me about the book and some of the other stuff that they had was good. But it felt to me like these people were willing to look over the fact that this guy's just with his kids. He's just going to get, like, you know, books off the 50-cent bin. Because I'm sure there's plenty of people that show up to these booths and they look around and they act interested. But of course, these people don't have a couple hundred bucks to spend on a book. And so they don't buy anything. That I totally understand that. And I understand that by Sunday, when you've been at a con for a couple days, probably don't want to deal with everybody. But notice that, at least for me, it was very important to have that interaction, and I was only willing to play ball with those people that gave me the kind of interaction that I expect. And if you don't have that kind of mentality when you go to a convention, then you're probably not talking to the right people. You're probably not getting the right kind of deals. Because I guarantee you, if you start forming some kind of rapport with these people, where it's obvious that you know what you want and in what condition you want, that these people will be able to work with you because they know that this guy actually wants to purchase something. And he's not just there to hang out with his kids or whatever it is that you do. Some of the other booths, none of that. Matter of fact, there were at least 6 or 7 booths that I stopped at looking for these books that I was looking for, where when I was looking through the long boxes, I didn't have a single interaction with anybody. And it's not like they had anybody else at the booth. Some of these booths were completely empty, except for me and my kids with me. There was nobody else there. They're just playing on their phone. They didn't even get a hello. But then once I start looking up to see what expensive books they have, then I got some kind of interaction. And that's not something that I want either. Because to me, every customer should be important, regardless of how much you think they're willing to spend. And it seems like at some of these booths, it seemed like these people didn't want to sell anything. They're just kind of counting down until the time of the con was over. And that just didn't sit right with me. Now, there are times where you could develop a really good relationship with these people, even when they don't have what it is that you want. As a matter of fact, there was one vendor there that was completely incredible. And I didn't get anything from him because he didn't have a single thing that I wanted. And he didn't even own a comic shop. This is like a guy that runs an antique store that just so happened to have a lot of old comics with him. And God, you should have seen like his FF collection was incredible. Incredible. He had probably like the first 100 issues of the Fantastic Four sitting in a box with him. And not all of them were in a box, of course. There were a few on the wall. But it was incredible. He had a ton of like Avengers stuff from the 60s. He had a lot of Batman, Golden Age and Silver Age Batman that I looked through quite a bit. And it just wasn't the stuff that I was looking for at this convention. Maybe at some point in the future. But he and I talked. We talked about the FF for quite a while. I told him kind of my history with the FF. Apparently he's been reading the FF pretty much since it started. He was an older guy. A lot of the books that he had there were from his personal collection that he purchased when he was a kid. So just really amazing to see that kind of thing. And while he didn't have what I wanted, I did get his card. And he's going to be checking in with a couple buddies of his because he might have a couple things that I am looking for from a friend of his. And he's going to hook me up with those people to try to make a transaction. Also, his wife was incredible. Like she wasn't paying attention much to what we were talking about. I guess she just, I don't know, probably like my wife, when I start talking comics, she just tunes out. But she was amazing. And when she noticed the stuff that we were talking about, she found that they had a couple of, well, I don't know, probably about like 10 long boxes of modern comics. And when she heard about the stuff that we were talking about, she found modern books. And she picked out like 4 or 5 and just gave them to my kids so that they could read. And that's not like costing them anything, right? Like these were like dollar books that just happened to have there, I guess just to make some extra scratch if they couldn't make a big sale. So it's not like they're losing anything, but think about what they gained, right? Because now I have a relationship with this guy. We're going to be going back and forth to try to find some of the stuff that I want. And I'm willing to do that. And I'm willing to trust the guy, and he's willing to take time out of his schedule to set me up with stuff that I want. Because we built a relationship, and it's pretty obvious that this guy loves what he does. And that's the kind of people that you need to look for when you go to a convention. Because there's plenty of people that just, they work at a comic shop and they don't really give a crap, right? But you do have guys who make a living off of this, where they may not sell a lot of stuff, but the stuff that sells matters because it might be something worth a little bit more money than just whatever's in the crap boxes at a convention. So I'll do a follow-up on whatever's going on with this guy. And I was really very, very, very surprised at the level of attention that this guy gave me and my kids, right? Because that means a lot. You know, if you've got a family and you want to buy something, the people are also willing to take time for your kids who, I mean, they could probably assume don't read comics. I think it's just amazing. So next time you go to a convention, look for those kind of people. See the kind of people that are willing to interact with you and give you some kind of attention. Because those are the people that you want to deal with. You want to build a relationship. Even if you're not a hardcore collector, where you're not looking for books that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? Maybe you're just filling in like, I don't know, what's a quarter book? Let's just say you want to have like a complete collection of the Ultraverse for whatever reason. I've got one, by the way. It didn't cost me very much. It was probably like $40. But, well, now that I think about it, I think I'm missing. I got to go to my list. So anyways, you might just be that kind of collector. Maybe you're a Dead Universe collector. Or like you love Robin and you just want that like 90s Robin series for whatever reason. Like there are those kind of people and that's fine. But even then you should still build those relationships, right? Because it makes it easier. And I mean, it's pretty easy nowadays. You can just go to my comic shop or what's another good place? You know, like Midtown, meh. Let's just say my comic shop. You just go to my comic shop and order whatever back issue you want, pretty much. And it's super simple. But the actual interactions that you can have at a convention, the face-to-face, really makes it something a little extra special, right? And that's one thing that I miss now that I've gone mostly digital for my books. The actual experience of going to a comic shop and taking some time to look through the racks, to look through the long boxes, to talk to whoever's working there, and have some kind of face-to-face. Maybe there's some other people there that are looking at a particular book and you don't know about it, and you can talk to them. There is something to say about that personal face-to-face interaction. And I recommend you try to gain some of those skills on how to deal with those kind of people when you go to a convention. But, man, I was so angry. Matter of fact, I'm glad I didn't record this, like, on Monday when I planned on doing it, because there probably would have been a lot of profanity. And if you disagree with me, that's awesome. Let me know at GeekVine on Twitter, comictalktoday@gmail.com. I want to know about your comic book experiences with finding great vendors or great creators or crappy ones and what that experience was like. And if there's people that you avoid, I don't want to know about it, at least not by name. Don't mention names, because I don't know if that's necessarily fair to some of these people. But it's important to build relationships. I know, you know, when I recorded about Batman Collecting with Chris Campbell, he was telling me about a few that he really likes. I know Richards, he really likes. Richard was actually there this past weekend. I looked through his stuff briefly, but I had a kid issue at the time, so we kind of moved on. And it's important to find those kind of people. So find those, avoid the ones that don't want to give you the time of day, because really it's not worth it. There's always going to be somebody at a convention that's willing to take the time to help you find exactly what it is that you want. All right, so rant over. I want to go ahead and do the comic predictor segment, formerly known as Top of the Pile, now Comic Predictor. Thanks, Nick. So Comic Predictor is the segment of the show that every week, before or on Comic Book Day, I dig through all the books that are coming out during the week, and I pick out a couple of books that I hope will be gems. And so far, I have not been disappointed. We'll see if I can keep the streak going, because I do have, let's see, I've got five books as possible gems for the week, and then one bonus pick. So let's get right to it. I've got an Aftershock to kick it off. This is Rough Riders Ride or Die number 2. It's Adam Glass, Pat O'Leaf. And this is, oh my god, it's fantastic. Life in Plastic is fantastic. This is volume 3 of Rough Riders. They've just started last month, the first issue came out. There's been two previous volumes. I believe this third one is the last one. And you don't need to go back and read volume 1 or 2 in order to read Rough Riders to Ride or Die, but I do recommend you at least pick up issue 1, kind of get a feel for what's going on. But you know, this has Teddy Roosevelt and Jack Johnson and Harry Houdini and, oh god, I forget the rest of the people. Thomas Edison and Annie Oakley are the team. And issue 2 comes out today, and I hope you'll be reading this, because it has been extremely fun to read Rough Riders every month that it comes out. And of course, Adam's going to be taking over. We hadn't talked about, did we talk about that? Yeah, I guess I mentioned it on yesterday's episode. But Adam's going to be writing the new Teen Titans book over at DC. And I highly recommend you check it out and see what you think about his writing before that book comes out. Next up is Breathless number 1. This is Patrick Shand and Renzo Rodriguez. And I know some people are going to want to smack me right now. I'm hoping this comes out today, because it's scheduled to come out today. It's a Black Mass title, so fingers crossed. But this sounds freaking awesome. I can't wait to read it. Breathless number 1, I'm going to read the synopsis. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer if the villains were Big Pharma. Scott Turner works as a cryptozoologist examining and cataloging supernatural creatures for scientific purposes. When she discovers the cure for asthma and the venom of a new breed of monster, she quickly finds herself on the run from Killingsworth Pharmaceuticals and the monsters that they've hired to kill her, and so on and so on. Anyways, this is I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I know there's people listening that are like, Martin, what in the world? Buffy the Vampire Slayer? Listen, yes, it's freaking awesome. Freaking awesome. Matter of fact, I think this year is the 20th anniversary of Buffy. It might be time for a rewatch of the series. So I'm really looking forward to Breathless number 1. I like the synopsis, because it's very inventive, and it doesn't sound like anything else that I've been reading lately, and I think Black Mass does a really good job at that. As long as they can keep the spoken schedule, it could be awesome. So, Breathless number one. Next up, Marvel time. And I'm gonna take some time, probably when this whole thing is over. But my next pick is Avengers number 686. This is Mark Waid, Paco Medina, and Mark Brooks. It is Word of Warning, part 12 of Avengers No Surrender. And this is the book that may be turning me around on reading weekly comics. So I want to thank a friend of the show, Mike Myers, from Mike M's Weekly Reads and the Geek Brunch podcast for suggesting this. Matter of fact, I think he talked about it on Twitter about reading it. And I remember talking to Jack from Ultimate Marvel, I think when the first issue of this came out. Which issue was that? 675? No, 672. Anyways, whatever issue that was. I remember reading it and enjoying it, but then I forgot about it. And the reason I forgot about it is because it's a weekly book, and you know me, I hate weekly books. But for some reason, I decided to give it a shot, and I was blown away. I read the first 10 parts of this in one sitting. Avengers No Surrender is absolutely fantastic. I have loved the living crap out of it, and I will definitely be picking this up. I don't want to spoil what's going on, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people that don't want to pick up a story in the part 12 of 16, I believe. But let me tell you, buddy, this is a great freaking comic book. Avengers 686, out today. Next up, we'll go to the DC side. I think it... Can we consider this DC? Young Animal side. Mother Panic, Gotham AD number 1. This is Jody Houser, Ibrahim Mustafa, and Tommy Lee Edwards. And this takes place after Milk Wars, which I still haven't read and I've heard so much about. But it takes place after Milk Wars. In fact, it takes place 10 years in the future, where in a Gotham that doesn't have a Batman anymore. And Mother Panic was a really interesting book, and I really, really enjoyed it. I think way more than I thought I would. I've had this this weird thing with not liking a lot of Jody Houser stuff. But for some reason, Mother Panic really kicked with me. Or clicked. Not kicked. I guess it could kick. But it really clicked with me. And I've really enjoyed it. It's a Batman-type character. But it's a female character. And it really dives deep into what Gotham is. So even though it's, I don't think, technically in continuity with Batman, it does play in that universe, and I thoroughly enjoyed Mother Panic, so I am very much looking forward to Mother Panic Gotham AD number 1. The final pick of the week is a Titan comic from Titan Comics. This is part of their Static Press line, and they're bringing in European books, translating them into English, and releasing them here in the U.S., so, if you're a fan of European comics, you might want to give this a shot. In fact, maybe you'll know Yassine Elgari, who is the writer and artist. And there is a variant cover by Simon Beasley, who, if I'm not mistaken, is the co-creator of Lobo. So, that's cool. And this is Mad Max meets Fallout. And for me, that's all you had to say. But for some people, you're like, I don't know what any of that means. Mad Max is a freaking awesome post-apocalyptic movie with Mel Gibson from the early 80s. Mad Max Fury Road came out like 2 years ago. That was freaking awesome. I loved it. And Fallout's a video game that also takes place in this weird post-apocalyptic world with weird monster-y things. So, Mad Max meets Fallout in the nightmarish vision of life on a dystopian planet. A band of mutants slog through the harsh deserts of a dystopian planet in search of the factory, the last semblance of civilization left among the wasteland. I love post-apocalyptic stuff. I know some people are getting a little tired of it. But I always look for these kind of things because as many different stories as have been told in a post-apocalyptic setting, I think there is so much more that still can be told because we do see new stuff pop up in the genre. So I'm not going to discount it based on just the fact that it's post-apocalyptic. And I look very much forward to reading Factory number 1. Static Press is the same line where they put out Dr. Radar. And I read Dr. Rader, and I enjoyed it. It wasn't quite what I hoped it would be. I know a lot of people that I am friends with have read it and did not like it. But, you know, European comics are they're different than American comics, so I don't expect everybody to love them. But I am looking forward to this, Factory number 1 from Titan Comics. And my bonus pick is going to be, I know some people are waiting for it, they think it's going to be Shadow Man number 1, which also comes out, but it's not it. It's Damnation, Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider number 1 from Chris Sabella, Phil Noto, and Clayton Crane. And holy cow, what a creative team. This is a one-shot, if I'm not mistaken. It ties into the whole Doctor Strange Damnation thing that's going on. And this is Johnny Blaze takes on Mephisto. And I love Johnny Blaze. Mephisto used to be my favorite villain back in the day. I'm so looking forward to this. I can't wait. So that's going to be my bonus pick. Damnation, Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider, number 1 from Marvel Comics. And of course, I'll be reading all these comics and many more throughout the week, either Friday or Saturday. I will be putting out the top of the pile for the week, in which I will discuss these books and any other books that I feel deserve a discussion. If you have a book that you end up reading that you really enjoy, feel free to let me know at Geekvine or comictalktoday@gmail.com. And maybe I'll read them and I'll talk about them as well. But I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Comic Talk Today. Thank you for putting up with me. God, this week is going to be almost daily. Got an episode yesterday, got an episode today. If all goes well, friend of the show, Ronnie Barron, will be my guest for Therapy Thursday. We'll be talking some news. He's got a topic that he wants to discuss that I think will be very interesting. Of course, there will be a game that I'm not going to spoil. But all that will be coming tomorrow. And Friday will be an episode. Saturday will be an episode. Sunday, I will be taking the day off because it's Easter. Thanks for tuning into the show. Don't forget, go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever it's called nowadays. Leave a review. Thanks to everybody that's been leaving one. It's been awesome. I will continue reading them. I'm not going to do it today. But tomorrow, I will read another review. And I think that's it. We'll catch you tomorrow.